What Steve's shared, as you will see, leads very helpfully into this, I think. So we read verses 9 to 19, Jeremiah chapter 2. Therefore I bring charges against you again, declares the Lord, and I will bring charges against your children's children. Cross over to the coasts of Cyprus and look, send to Kedar and observe closely. See if there has ever been anything like this. Has a nation ever changed its gods? But they're not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glorious God for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, you heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. Is Israel a servant, a slave by birth? Why then has he become plunder? Lions have roared, they have growled at him, they have laid waste his land, his towns are burned and deserted. Also the men of Memphis and Tapanes have cracked your skull. Have you not brought this on yourselves by forsaking the Lord your God when he led you in the way? Now, why go to Egypt to drink water from the Nile? And why go to Assyria to drink water from the Euphrates? Your wickedness will punish you. Your backsliding will rebuke you. Consider then and realize how evil and bitter it is for you when you forsake the Lord your God and have no awe of me, declares the Lord Almighty. Well, it's been half term this week, at least in Bristol, though not anywhere else in the country or the world, which has been confusing. Quite a few of us have managed to have a break this week, especially if you're in school or working there. And a holiday or a break does us good. We need our breaks. It's great for restoring our energy, catching up on sleep, having fun, seeing family and friends, breaking out of your routine. It's great for overcoming weariness of body and mind. But there's another kind of weariness that doesn't come from busy days or a demanding job, and that is spiritual weariness, a tiredness of spirit that can creep over any of us Christians. What does it look like, this spiritual weariness? It's a loss of enthusiasm in the Christian life. When our love for the Lord seems to drop away, our commitment to other believers dwindles, and our ministry and service is no more than a chore. All Christians suffer from it sooner or later, and you may be feeling it right now. And the number one reason for spiritual weariness is that we are looking in the wrong place for our joy and satisfaction. For one reason or another, we've stopped looking to Christ and gone searching for meaning and reality in all sorts of other places. No wonder we feel tired. You'll recognize the picture. But the good news is it doesn't have to be that way. Spiritual weariness is not something we have to accept. And this passage in Jeremiah speaks directly to this deep need of our soul to be refreshed and renewed. So, let's look at this together, just for these few minutes. We'll be getting some help from the writing of John Newton, the converted slave trader who lived on to be a wonderful and discerning pastor, and wrote some really helpful things. Well, Jeremiah is a prophet preaching in Jerusalem around 600 BC. And at the time of his ministry, his nation is on the verge of destruction, and the exile to Babylon is no longer on the distant horizon, it's drawing near. It's approaching fast. And this whole chapter 2 is a summons and a challenge to God's people to remember where they have come from and a warning about the future. In the early verses of the chapter, as the Lord speaks to the people he loves, he reminds them of the old days. Have a look at that. The days when he called and chose them, when he rescued them from Egypt and brought them through the desert to the promised land. Oh, those were great days, says the Lord. Oh, you loved me then. Our love was new and fresh. So what went wrong? Verse 5, What fault did your ancestors find with me that caused them to stray and abandon their love for me? What happened? Well, they got bored with remembering my goodness. Verses 6 to 8. The way that I rescued and led them and gave them the land. They didn't want to know about that anymore. The priests gave up pointing people to me. The leaders stopped ruling the way I told them to. And worst of all, the prophets gave up speaking for me and dreamed up their messages in the name of false gods instead. What a disaster. And from verse 9, where we started reading, the Lord is setting out a legal case against his own people. Therefore, I bring charges against you again, declares the Lord. And I will bring charges against your children's children. Take a quick tour of the nations around, he says. Do you see any of them swapping their gods? And their gods are rubbish. They're just idols. But hey, at least they're consistent. At least they stick to them. My people, you had me, the God of glory, and you've walked away. As it's a legal case, the Lord calls a witness. He calls the cosmos to bear witness to what has happened. Verse 12, be appalled at this, you heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. And now he comes to the heart of the matter, and this is our key verse, 13. My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. Now, the Lord goes on to explain further how Israel's actions have brought about their own suffering at the hands of foreign powers. They have only themselves to blame for the disasters which have now begun to strike. Verse 17, have you not brought this on yourselves by forsaking the Lord your God? And verse 19, consider, realize, reflect. See what you've done. But back to verse 13. How do we understand this about the spring and the water cisterns? Well, in those days, long before there was water in the taps, you generally get your water from one of two places. If you're really fortunate, you have a spring of water on your land. You can dig a well and fresh water will constantly be surging into it, clear and cold and healthy. A spring like that will draw people from miles around. The alternative? Not so good. If you have no spring nearby, well, here's what you can do. You can basically dig a hole in the ground. You can excavate a cistern. That's basically what it was, a hole in the ground with a narrow opening. And into this opening, you then direct any rainwater, the runoff from the road, water off your roof, from your fields, from your farmyard. All sorts of stuff gets flushed down the hole with it into the cistern. Oh, and you'd better line it with plaster or it will all leak out again. Here's a description by one of the commentators. The best cisterns, even those in solid rock, are strangely liable to crack. The water collected from clay roofs or from marly soil has the color of weak soap suds. The taste of the earth or the stable is full of worms. And in the hour of greatest need, it utterly fails. So, if you had the choice of drinking from a faithful spring or a cracked cistern, you wouldn't have to think for very long. Choosing to drink from a cistern would be like drinking water that's just been used to flush the toilet. It would be like drinking from a muddy puddle instead of the tap, which my dog does all the time, but which I certainly do not recommend. And yet that is what God's people are doing. They've chosen to drink from the toilet when they could have had Highland Spring. Other ways, other delights, other satisfactions instead of the Lord who saved them. They know him. They know their own story of grace and salvation. They could have told you the story of rescue from Egypt and the Exodus and everything that God had done. They know all that. They know the Lord, but they are no longer pursuing him. That's the story of God's people, Israel. Now, what about us? We've been saved, haven't we? We're Christians. If we know about that, we know our story. We know how God has rescued us from the power of sin and hell through the sacrifice of his son. We have Christ, and we know that belonging to Jesus Christ and knowing him is all that will really satisfy us. We know it, but perhaps it no longer matters to us. Where are you and I going for our spiritual refreshment? Where are you and I going for satisfaction? Could it be that we're making exactly the same mistakes as old Israel? And that is why we are spiritually so weary. I want to encourage us all to search ourselves here as we come to the end of this evening together. As Christians, even once we are saved, we can go astray so very easily. So many other delights and possibilities present themselves. Today, more than ever, there is so much on offer. Last Sunday evening, we were thinking about career and ambition, those career drivers like status and wealth, where we can so easily turn for satisfaction. Or we look inside ourselves, judging whether we're doing well, whether we're secure, whether we're happy, whether life is going okay. And if it is, we're satisfied. If not, we're troubled. We're weary because we're being ruled by our circumstances. John Newton knew this was true of him. Here's what he said about seeking Christ. We are prone, at least I may speak for myself, to forsake the fountain of living waters and to hew out broken cisterns. Instead of receiving him, I am often looking in myself for something to enable me to do without him. And if you are spiritually weary tonight, if the Christian race seems very long and hard to you, then I urge you to ask yourself where you are looking for ultimate pleasure. Is it some meaningless fantasy that drives you? Is it the relentless quest for material security that even as a Christian you've convinced yourself that you still need? You may be looking at things that are good in themselves. It may be your career or your family or your education that you're pursuing. We don't dismiss those good gifts from the Lord. But the ultimate gift is not any of those things. The ultimate gift is Christ. And it's not just that he saved us, which is wonderful. It's that he wants us to pursue him now. John Newton preached to Christians who seemed to be asleep in their faith. And he did that by confronting them with the wonderful reality of Christ. And he urges them to look first at Jesus on the cross, hanging there, dead and forsaken and bleeding for us. And then this, look unto him again as he now reigns in glory, possessed of all power in heaven and on earth, with thousands and thousands of saints and angels worshipping before him. And then compare your sins with his blood, your wants with his fullness, your unbelief with his faithfulness, your weakness with his strength, your inconstancy with his everlasting love. If the Lord opens the eyes of your understanding, you would be astonished at the comparison. Jesus is enough for us. He is enough for every need. He can satisfy. He can fill our spiritual emptiness. He can renew and restore our love. And he will, if we go after him, the spring of living water. If you're not a Christian, and perhaps you're wondering what all this is about, it doesn't make sense to you. Well, we want to tell you this loud and clear. Whatever you believe you need in this life, whatever you're living your life for, whatever journey you think you're on, Jesus Christ is the one you need. He may not give you everything you think you want now, but he will do something far better. He will give you what you need and more. And he will satisfy you at the deepest level. What do you think will satisfy you? Well, he will. To believe in him and his death on the cross for you, that death which changes everything, that deals with the disasters of the past and gives you hope and meaning for the future, it's unending. To walk through this life with one who will always love you and never walk away from you. To live to please him instead of yourself. And just hear these words of invitation as we close. Jesus said this, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Jesus said, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink." And we join with him in saying these words. Let the one who hears say, "Come." Let the one who is thirsty come. And let the one who wishes take the free gift of the water of life. It's there for you. If you've never known Jesus, it's there for you. You can come to know him tonight. But if you do know him already, come to him for the water of life. What will satisfy you? Don't look at anything else. Look at Jesus Christ. Drink the living water tonight. We'll just take a minute of quiet to think about that. Think of the living water, beautiful spring of clear water that is Jesus Christ. Think of the dirty water in the cistern. It's everything else that cannot satisfy.